The Telegraph Cycling Podcast, brought to you by Trainer Road, cycling's most effective training tool. Pair your power meter with over 800 workouts and 80 training plans to make you a faster cyclist. Visit trainerroad.com/TCP to try Trainer Road risk-free for 30 days.
I want to be the title sponsor. What's it going to cost?
I think around 10 million.
Yeah, that's a bit out of my budget.
I have the impression that we are in the place where we have to be now.
Greg had a really bad back all last week, so we caught up on your podcast with me giving him a back massage and him listening to you guys.
That's a wonderful image.
With exclusive interviews and the best analysis on two wheels, this is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Basque Country, one of cycling's talent hotbeds, for a special edition of the Cycling Podcast. My name's Richard Moore and I am without Lionel Burney and Daniel Freeb today, though we will hear from Lionel later on with a clip from a forthcoming Friends special will be released in the next few days. That's Lionel in conversation with the Yates brothers, Simon and Adam. Here in the Basque Country, though, I've been meeting with some riders and other people involved in the sport here to find out why this small mountainous corner of northern Spain has such a strong cycling culture. It's a mysterious place, a mountainous place, a paradoxical place, perhaps the most prosperous part of Spain, but it's had its problems in the past with the violent separatist group ETA. They declared a ceasefire in 2010, and the place does seem more stable these days, and it's certainly thriving economically, as everybody I met was very keen to tell me. I've met with some riders, as I mentioned. I've also been on a tour of one of the two major bike companies in the region. That's Orbea, the other one is BH. Orbea celebrates its 175th anniversary this year. It started off as a gun factory, and it's a cooperative, an interesting place. You'll hear from the Orbea factory later on in this episode. Of the riders I met, one of them was Mikel Landa, third in the Giro this year, moving to Team Sky from Astana this winter, and the two Trek factory racing veterans, Aymar Zubeldia and Markel Irizar. All three, alike all the Basque pros, are products of the Euskaltel Euskadi team, which the catalyst for that was actually the 1992 Tour de France Grand Départ in San Sebastian. And then for the best part of two decades, Euskaltel was a conveyor belt of Basque talent and also an opportunity for Basque riders to turn pro. When they folded at the end of the 2013 season, it was a sad day for Basque cycling, a sad day also for cycling fans who'd got used to seeing the orange-clad riders and the orange-clad supporters in the Pyrenees when the Tour de France was there. Perhaps it was a throwback, a regional team in a globalised sport, but nevertheless, a sad day. And it's been an uncertain time since then for Basque cycling. So two questions, really. What now? I've learned of some encouraging news about an ambitious team, Murias, which has got plans to eventually fill the gap left by Euskaltel. Also, perhaps rumours of a bid for the Grand Départ of the Tour de France again, from Bilbao this time. I also wanted to try and understand what makes the Basque people and the Basque cyclists different, what defines them. And that was where I started with Markel Irizar, the rider who is with Trek Factory Racing and is known as Basque Radio for his tendency to talk a lot. So I thought he'd be a good person to start with. And I asked Markel, what defines a Basque rider?
Okay, I think it's not only about Basque riders, no? I would say, one of the philosophy of the Basque, let's say, society or whatever, is like to be hard workers, you know? I think the one of the things that we learn since we are kids from our parents is like when you need to achieve something in your life, that you need to really go for it and work really hard, no? So I think in the culture of the Basque people, and now I'm not talking about cycling, I would say that to be loyal, to be friendly, even if we are pretty shy and they say that we are pretty close, that we are not so open like the Spanish one, but I think that the ones that you have, you can say that the ones that one Basque is a friend, let's say it's a friend for the rest of their life, no?
That's funny, because I asked Mikel Landa the other day what defined Basque people, and he said close, and I didn't really understand what he meant, but by that you mean sort of reserved, self-contained?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is also like a little bit because of the weather, you know? Maybe once that the... Also, maybe the English or the Norway or the Sweden, they can understand, you know? When half of the year is super cloudy and it rains a lot, maybe it's more sad, you know? And when everybody... You have sunshine, everybody's walking around, everybody's out having party. Maybe you are, happier or whatever, different personality. So I don't know if it's because of the weather or whatever that we are pretty, they say that we are pretty close, that we are not so open. But I would say also like in the other way, like maybe we are close, but once that someone knows us, how we react, how we are, I think that we are friendly and you can trust 100%. And I think that's why the industry also, like now in Spain it's a big crisis, but in the past we are doing much, much better. Also it's because we have different philosophy about working and doing well and things. And at the end, the same philosophy have the riders, you know. That's why, I mean, now there are 5 riders on Team Sky, no? Mm. So almost 20% of the riders of the Sky, they are Basque. So
I think it's the new Euskaltel, it's Team Sky. Yeah. A lot of the Basque riders that we know and followed over the years have been great climbers, you know, it's such a mountainous region.
Yeah.
And so there must be a sort of natural filtering out process of cyclists, you know, the strong climbers must be the ones who excel. You're a strong climber, but you're a bit different because you're also a strong rouleur, a good strong time trialist. I mean, so you're quite unusual, but you're also maybe unusual in that you're famous for being a great talker as well. You're maybe not quite as reserved as some of the other ones.
I think that I have, my genetic is coming from somewhere else, you know. I think that I'm not 100% Basque. They need to make a blood test and genetic to check my ADN that for sure I'm not Basque. I talk a lot, and that's why they call me Radio Basca. And yes, also I love the classics, you know. I think that I was born not in the wrong place, because I love to being born in Basque, but with the wrong body to be a Basque rider, because everybody, like you say, everybody here is climber and I am pretty heavy. So from the very beginning, I knew that it was going to be difficult to be, I mean, like in the team that I was in Euskaltel, it was really difficult because everybody was climber, no? So once I had the opportunity to join Team Radio Shack, I didn't think about this. I went there and then I started to do, okay, before I was doing also the classics, and now I am with Kanchi in the team of the classics. So I would say that I'm not the normal or the typical Basque, no.
Jaimar Zubeldia was a marshal when the Tour de France started in the Basque country in San Sebastian in 1992. Miguel Indurain, from the neighbouring region near Pamplona, he won the prologue time trial on his way to his second Tour de France victory. And the 15-year-old Zubeldia was on the course helping to ensure things ran smoothly. Went on to a professional career himself, of course. Zubeldia has finished in the top 10 on 5 occasions in the Tour de France, very consistent rider, not really known for his attacking riding, although that changed a bit in 2015 when he went on the attack in the Vuelta and finished second on a stage to Nicolas Roach. But on the day that I met Zubeldia in the Basque country, he had some good news about the up-and-coming Murias team.
The last year was difficult for the Basque cycling, no? Because we know, everybody knows the reasons, no? Because we have a big crisis in Spain, but yesterday we have a really nice news, no? Because the government invites us again in the Murias team money for the future, and in 2017 they say they make another step and they pass to professional continental team. And it's a good news, no? Because I have a lot of friends, young riders that are riding now like amateur. They don't see the future clear, no? Because when I was young, it was different, no? Because in that moment, just Euskaltel make a step, and Euskaltel just passed like a sponsor, and it was easier for us, no? Almost every year they pass, I don't know, but 4 or 5 riders, no? And like this, I think in the last year maybe we passed for amateur to professional, maybe 100 riders, no?
And there was a development team as well with Euskaltel, Euskadi and Orbea, and so there was a real pathway, wasn't there, for riders. Since Euskaltel disappeared, has support for Basque cycling decreased, or is the support still there?
The culture is there, no? The culture don't change, no? Because, but it's not easy for the young riders, no? Because they don't see easy, they can pass to pro, no? They try, the level was there, they don't change. But you see, no, in the last year, I don't know, but not a lot of riders they pass to the pro, no? They need to go, or they have opportunity maybe in Movistar or Caja Rural. There are another team in Navarra. But in Spain, we don't have more, no? And they need to go out, no? And like this is not easy, no? But I think now the future can be more open, no? Because I think the government make a big effort again. The crisis is over, and we are making steps in the economy to make it better. And this is the key, no? I think everything is not the money, but they help a lot, no?
And there's now the older generation of Spanish riders have been getting towards their final years, I guess, Valverde, Contador, people like that, but with Mikel Landa could be a new rider. I was going to ask you just about that culture that's so strong here in the Basque Country for cycling. Why is that? Where does that come from?
I don't know, no, this is the question. No, before come here, I was thinking in that also, no? For where come this culture, no? But when I was young, I see my father also, no? If you go on bike in the weekend, you can see a lot of riding, a lot of people, no? Women, men. And I don't know for where come, no? When I born was like this, no? I start like this. My father was a cyclo amateur also. He go every Sunday with friends, and I start with him, no? I think the orography also can help a lot, no? You have a nice orography, no? You have climbs, we have plate also. Maybe during the winter the weather don't help a lot, but after May we have more or less after May we have until October, November we have a good weather, and this help a lot, no? And also we have big races, no? In the past big races we have a Tour of Vice Basque. We have also before Euskal Bicicleta. Normally, the Tour of Spain also come here more or less every year. In 96 or 94, the Tour also starts in San Sebastian. We have a big culture here, no?
It's a very proud region. Is there a characteristic, a trait that makes the Basque people who they are? And do you see that reflected in the cyclists?
Yeah, I think this is really clear, no? The character of Basque people is we are good workers, we are serious, we try to do our best always, no? And I think it's one of the our characteristics, no? And the cycling is good sport to see that, no? You can see, no? If you see the peloton of the past, there are a lot of riders or Basque riders, no? And maybe I'm not the best guy to say that, no, but if you ask to the managers, or and now I'm in Trek, no, and if you ask to Luca, he can say, no, how we are, no, we are two guys in Trek, but if you see the another Pro Tours teams, we are backs in almost in all the teams, no, in Sky you have now Mikel Landa, in Jousty, Zandi Oizdor, also in Movistar you have RBT, a lot of, no? In other teams also.
It's interesting because it seems to me there are two types of Basque rider. There are guys like yourself, Mikel Nieve, very selfless, prepared to sacrifice your own chances. But you also have guys like Iban Mayo, who are very attacking, panache. Yeah. Landa seems to want to be a similar type of rider. So do you see that there are two types of rider?
Yeah, I think in this type of cyclist you can see the different characters also, no? Also in the variety you have also two kind of cyclists, no? I say you before like a worker, and I'm not aggressive, but with the work you recollect it, the results, no? But also you have with big talent cyclists, no? Like Landa, when you say Iban Mayo also, no? They have big talent, and it's another kind of cyclist, no? They are attacking, aggressive, and the people like this kind of, because in the TV it's more spectacular. And
that was Jaimar Zubeldia. But let's hear again from Markel Irizar, again on Euskaltel, where he rode from 2004 to 2009, and about their peak years in 2003 and 2004 in particular, what that team meant for the Basque riders, the new Mirias team, and the rumours of Bilbao bidding for the Grand Départ of the Tour de France.
I always say the same, like, we need to understand, like, let's say, if Landa, if, okay, Inchausti was not professional with us, but then it came to here. I mean, if Euskalde was not here, we would never be, even me, it would never be professional. We would never have a chance to be professional. So we talk a lot about this, you know. If a new team is not coming, we are not going to have success in the future, because the success of this year is because of the work of 10 or 12 years ago, you know. For example, Landa. So now, I mean, I'm really happy that it looks like the Basque Country, I mean, Euskadi Basque Country, they are again on the road in 2016. It looks like they're going to be professional in 2017. I don't know if it is true, but they say that they're going to ask the Tour de France, the start of the Tour de France in Bilbao. I don't know which year. So it looks like if they ask for the start of the Tour de France, there would be a chance that the team grows enough to be in the start of the Bilbao, no? So for us, it would be again great, you know, to have a team, and I think that, like, for a future generation, it would be fantastic, no?
And without the team, I mean, since Euskaltel disappeared, do you fear for young Basque riders coming through? And is it partly because, as you say, so many, because they're maybe quite humble and not so exuberant as other riders, that maybe they're not so good at going abroad and finding opportunities in teams, that a whole generation of talented Basque riders might not get the opportunities that you and your generation got?
100%, you know, like, I was always thinking, you know, like, that we should let a better cycling that we found, you know, not only for the Basque, for everybody, you know. I'm concerned about safety, about everything. And of course, I mean, I had a chance thanks to Euskaltel. And then I realized, like, let's say I have three boys, and let's say that in the future they want to be a bike riders. And I was thinking, like, it's going to be impossible for them to be professional, you know, if you have no team here. So now that, again, the team is coming, I mean, not in the same level, not in World Tour, but, okay, we start again, we are back in the business. So I hope that in a couple of years, you know, we are going to have again a team there, and this is going to help again to have new riders and new young talents, no?
It clearly helps as well to have riders who really capture people's imagination. I mean, Mayo was that sort of rider who won big races. The Basque fans were out in the mountains in huge numbers. He was an exciting, attacking rider. Landa might be a similar kind of rider in the sense that he seems very aggressive and not somebody who's just going to follow wheels, but actually make races. Is that, could somebody like him be very important in getting that support again in the Basque Country?
Yeah, I think so, because Mikel also, like, I mean, I really like his personality, you know. He's like, he's super friendly, but he has 100% confidence in himself, you know. If you want to be a big, big leader, I mean, you need to be a little bit, like, to have no fear, you know. He's not scared about nothing, you know. Like, he doesn't care if he's contador or whatever. And that makes him, you know, because they are good riders and they are excellent riders, you know. Like, they are, like, and like Valverde on this, that they have something special. And Landa has this special, you know.
So Irizar was speaking there about Mikel Landa, who I met in Vitoria. And I asked the new Team Sky signing about his breakthrough at the 2015 Giro, where he finished third and won two stages, but perhaps had to sacrifice his own ambitions there for his Italian Astana teammate Fabio Aru.
Yeah, after the Giro, my head changed, so I want to try winning something. I want to be a leader. I want to have my opportunities. So I saw that in Astana it wasn't any place for me, no, for another leader. That's why I changed the team.
When you became aware that Sky were interested in signing you, when was that? And was that something that instantly you thought? Because Euskaltel, there was a lot of uncertainty at that team. Astana, there's been a lot of uncertainty. I guess Sky is a more solid team. Was that something that attracted you to them?
Yeah, I know about their interest, I think, from the beginning of the season. When I was ill also, they were speaking with my manager, with Giuseppe. So it's easy for anyone, no? When you are in a bad moment and someone is interested in you more than your own team, it's something to help you to take a decision when you have to take it. So the project that they offered me, a sport project, no? And the interest from the beginning of the season are the reasons.
Well, it's interesting you say you're very ambitious and you want to win and lead the team, because I think a lot of the Basque riders, Nieve is a good example, they're very selfless, very good team workers, seem very humble people. Do you think you're different? Do you think you're maybe not typical in that sense, that you are very ambitious and that you want to be a winner yourself?
Yeah, maybe. Also, before Giro, I wasn't to that ambition that I'm now. No? Mm. The Giro changed me. I saw that I can try doing something, so I have to try. It's an opportunity that I think maybe never I would have. No? So I have to try. I won't, because I saw that I can.
Landa also told me that since his ride at the Giro, more people are recognising him and supporting him at home in the Basque Country.
Yeah, the child's always looking at me. Someone wants a photo, and what I like more is when I cross other riders. No, for example, Sunday morning in the early morning, and you are alone and you cross all people riding the bike, and they say, "You opa, Miquel," or it's good. No,
so you're getting a lot of encouragement while you're out. It makes training easier, does it?
Yeah, that's it. You get stronger for that training, for hard training.
More people watching you, maybe more people as well trying to sort of keep up with you and attack you maybe on the climbs, no?
Yeah, now they are all looking for me. They want to, they say me, now you don't have nobody to wait. You have to attack and attack. I think they love that. No, more than winning, they always want to win. No? But if you give some spectacle.
You mentioned earlier that you liked watching Iban Mayo. Is that the sort of rider you want to be, somebody that makes people excited?
Yeah, I like that. I like, for example, in the cyclist, it's not winning is important, no, and it's which gives you everything. But it's also beautiful, no, getting people happy with you when you attack, when you move. That's exciting, no, for the people. So that's beautiful. You don't have to win for having people with you.
Don't tell Dave Brailsford.
Yeah.
Okay, back to the man known as Basque Radio, Markel Irizar. Here he is on what makes the Basque Country different to the rest of Spain and the controversy of racing under the Basque flag.
Yeah. Of course, here, for example, where we are, it was like a big, in the 70s, it was a big industry. Still, we have a big industry. And also, like, here you have universities and everything, and I think that in these things we are pretty different, you know, from Spain. Like, there they make a lot of things, like, for the cars, like brakes, suspension, stuff like this, pretty high-quality things. Like, we have, like, a Irizar Bus Company, we make trains, we make... Then the bus, you make, like, a lot of technology things, you know? So, yeah, we are doing pretty okay, but, we are a small country, we have, like... I think that we are 2.5 million, so we are not so many. We are less than London City, you know? So,
it's similar, though, in a way, and you like the classics. Can you see similarities with Flanders, another strong cycling culture with a very strong sense of its identity?
Yeah, I really think that in many things we are like them, you know? Yeah, because we feel like... and I always say the same, you know? It's nothing about going against, you know, that also we have, like, we had a political conflict here, you know, and it's not nothing about going against Spain or whatever, just that we feel super proud of being Basque, and that's it. And I don't know where is the problem, you know, that when, for example, we ride with the Basque flag and they say, hey, it's not respect for Spain, and it's nothing about going against Spain. It's like, if I would have the Basque or the flag of Oñati that I am born, nobody would be pissed, nobody. If I have of the Gipuzkoa, that is my region, the region of San Sebastian, nobody would be pissed. But once that I have the flag of Basque Country, everybody's pissed. I say, like, no, we don't... It's not like if I like you, it's like I am against the other one. I mean, if I like from me, that doesn't mean that I am against Contador. Just I like from me, that's it. And if you ask me, you prefer from Dan Quintana? Maybe, but it's not that I don't like Quintana. I like also Quintana. So I don't know why. Is the problem like, oh, they are racing with the Basque flag, and oh, this is again Spain? No. We feel really, really proud. I am professional thanks to the Basque Country for the Basque government. I was like, when I was younger, you know, I had like some help from the government, you know, to make like studies for the nutritionists and everything. Everything was paid with the Basque government. So now that Euskal has stopped, I feel like, okay, we need to be ambassador of the Basque country. So the also the Basque industry, they are trying to make the brand of Basque country now to try to sell products, you know, all over the world. So I think that, okay, we have like a mission, like to try to be ambassador of the Basque country, you know, and wherever we go, try to explain what is the Basque country and make the best image of the Basque country that we can. So that's why we feel, I mean, super proud of being Basque, and for sure you notice this, you know, when we talk with us, everybody is super proud of being Basque and from our flag, from our country, from our language and for everything, you know.
I also met with Eneko Garati, who's been involved in Basque cycling for a long time and now runs a publishing company publishing cycling books in Spanish. He told me a bit about the Basque origins of the Vuelta a España.
The Vuelta was created by a newspaper based in Bilbao, and for many years they had many stages in the Basque country. Then it changed, and during the last years of Franco's dictatorship, it was cancelled. Some stages in the Basque country, they were cancelled because of the TA, because some attacks of ETA. So the organizers they decided to avoid this risk, and for many many years, the Vuelta a España never came to Basque country until recently, with some stages finishing in Bilbao or Vitoria. But it was a mix of this. Political violence, and also to avoid peaceful protest of pro-independence people.
I met Mika Landa yesterday. He said he would rather win the Tour of the Basque Country than the Vuelta. is that typical?
Yeah. I would say it's typical. And or you see the T-shirts of some bike cyclists when putting the flag. Some of them put a Basque flag, but some other put a Spanish flag. And I think it's a feeling, or it's just something that they want to underline, that maybe they prefer to be Basque, or they are only Basque. So.
While staying in San Sebastian, I wanted to do a bit of cycling myself. So I rented a nice Carbon Orbea from Kili, a boutique bike shop in the city where I spent too much money, and met the owner, Oscar Aguiriano. He's a very friendly guy who also runs Basque Country Cycling, he told me, which offers guided tours. And he offered to take me to Orbea, the factory, one of the two major manufacturers in the region, along with BH. Both companies actually started out making guns but switched to bikes after the First World War. On our way to the Orbea factory, I chatted to Oscar.
Well, we started a few years ago offering guided tours and rental bikes in Basque Country. So the idea is that people that is coming to the Basque region, they can enjoy, of course, our riding places and tracks, but our culture too. Basque culture, and it's quite different and wide. And we have the gastronomy culture, and so we try to offer a cycling experience that we know we don't have the Tourmalet, even if it's really close to us, but we have other really nice routes and with really nice stops, restaurant stops and things like that. So that's basically what we are offering. And in the case of the collaboration with Orbea, the idea is to close the circle. You ride our routes or our mountain rides, you can eat our food and our gastronomy in general, and you can ride a Basque brand like Orbea with all his heritage and philosophy, cooperative philosophy, etc.
So if you arrive at the airport in Bilbao or wherever, can you be collected? Do you collect people, provide them with bikes, provide them with guided rides as well?
Yeah, for example, next year we have a 9 days tour. The plan it's really very simple. You arrive to Bilbao or Biarritz. These are the two international airports. We have less than 1 hour from San Sebastian, because we are located in San Sebastian. We come, first thing, we fit the bikes to the customer's fitting, because for us the most important thing is that you enjoy the ride as if you were on your bike. And after that, in this case, for example, it's a 9 days ride, we take them to the Pyrenees, but to the Spanish Pyrenees in the south part of the Pyrenees. And they enjoy 3 days there with different stages. We are finishing one of the stages in some the same finishes as the Tour de France, for example, in Aret. And from there, we go, after 3 days, we go to La Rioja, the winery region. There are 3 days biking there in the vineyards and visiting, of course.
Drinking a bit of wine?
Yeah, just a bit, just for hydrate. And after that, after these 3 days, then we come to San Sebastian and we make different rides along the coast, inland, and we do a special ride in part of the Clásica San Sebastián with the Jaizkibel climb and the Igeldo, this special finish that we have from 2 years ago. And this is something that all the cyclists have to done one day. They have to do it. So that can be one example of what we can offer.
Oscar, I've been cycling here on one of your bikes the last couple of weeks. Can you tell me where the flat roads are? It's a great place if you like hills, isn't it?
I'm sorry, they are not flat roads. Yeah, well.
Okay. My name is Joaquin Díaz Barrio, and I'm the Orbea press manager.
So we're in the Orbea factory here, celebrating a big anniversary, 175 years you've been around. Did the company start off making bikes?
Yeah, Orbea started in 1840 making short guns in Eibar, that it is a little town that it is close to here, the Mayavia headquarters. We are 10 kilometers away, more or less. So the little town is called Eibar. Orbea started making short guns in 1840, and they were making guns until 1930, more or less. It was a moment between wars, between the First World War and the Second World War. So when they started having less and less orders for the guns, they said, well, we have all this machinery, all these tubes, what we can do with all of this? So in that moment, it was an innovation because they went from the guns to the bicycles with the same tubes and with the same machinery that they have. And from the 1930, more or less, we are making bicycles, first of all in Eibar, and then on the 70s we moved to this Orbea headquarters right now, that it is Mayavia. In the beginning, in the 1930s, what Orbea did was to support the first stages of the Vuelta a España, the first years of the Vuelta a España. I think that
a lot of people don't know that the Vuelta started here in the Basque Country, didn't it?
Not only in Basque Country, it was in Spain, but Orbea and BH, for example, it was some of the brands that support the Vuelta a España in the very beginning, because there was no as much as bike brands that we can find right now on the market. So the riders in that moment, they rode with one bike or the other, so with Orbea or with BH. So we were trying to push in that moment one event like the Vuelta a España, because it was an event to make bigger the cycling. So we were providing them with the bikes, and the riders just arrive there and take one of the bikes and ride with it. So
we're in the main factory. What size is this, and how many people are working here?
Okay, this is the Orbea headquarters. We have here 10,000 square meters of production. We paint here, we assembly, we design, we have the offices. We are working here 180 people, and all of us, we are members, because Orbea is a cooperative, so all the people here, it is a member of
so
the company.
Yeah, you were saying earlier that in 1970, I think, the last member of the Orbea family sold up to the workers, and since then it has been a cooperative, so everybody here is sort of a part owner of the company.
Yeah, that's it. On the 1969, the last Orbea family descent, he wasn't seeing profit on the company, so he wanted to close the company, and the workers, they wanted to continue working, so they bought the company to this last Orbea guy. They create the Orbea cooperative. And from that moment, we are a cooperative, and all the people is a member.
Okay, we're an area. I'm not allowed to take a picture here, but we can describe what we're seeing. There are frames being sort of tested by almost like robots. Strange sort of pistons going up and down, and
testing the sort of flex and durability, I guess, of frames. It's an odd sight.
Yeah, and Orbea, what we do is to give a lifetime warranty to on every bicycle that we create. So what we need to do is to test our bicycles in order to see how much we are able to push them in order to support everything that the final customer is going to do. So here, for example, we can see one Ordu frame that it is a triathlon frame, making a pedaling position and making it maybe 100,000 times in order to see.
Does every frame go? Presumably, not every frame goes through this process, but how long will that frame be in that machine for?
It can be maybe 1 week, or we don't count it on days, it is more on cycles. So normally this can be there for 1,100 times, 100,000 times, sorry. The same with the pedaling position, but also on the fork, also on the rear triangle, also on the seat post. I mean, finally, what we do is to recreate what the user is going to make with that frame, if it has any problem or not. If it has any problem, we will fix it in order to put on the market the best frame that we can create, because finally we are giving a lifetime warranty. So we need to ensure that that frame, it is ready for everything.
After the tour of the Orbea factory, I jump back in the van for the drive back to San Sebastian with Oscar. I had been exploring some of the roads on my own, but another option is to join one of Oscar's guided tours. I asked him what is on the menu.
Not all the riders are the same. Not all the riders have the same expectations in terms of kilometers or heights or climbs or whatever it is. So we are specialized in tailor-made guided routes. Our main goal is that the cyclist, the tourist, enjoys their days, and it's just let us know what do you want to do. It's more important cycling than gastronomy. Okay, don't worry, we will do 200 kilometers per day. Cycling is important, but gastronomy more. Don't worry.
I've got a friend who definitely fits that category. Lionel Burney, my colleague on the podcast, I think he'll definitely be tilting towards the gastronomical experience.
Okay, well, for example, we have what we call the Michelin stars experience. Of course, that's something very special, and it's very simple. It's you ride whatever you want or what you propose to us, and every night you have a Michelin stars dinner. It is interesting that around San Sebastian, in less than 40 kilometers, we have 21 Michelin stars in 8 different restaurants. So that's very unique. So to have the opportunity to have every night one of these gastronomic experiences, that's something you only can do it in Basque Country. Yeah.
I hope you've enjoyed this special cycling podcast on the Basque Country. But I thought before ending, we should end by returning to the man known as Basque Radio, Markel Irizar, to clear up the mystery over his nickname. It was Lance Armstrong that christened you Basque Radio, was it?
Yeah. It was in his last race, was in Tour de Ronde. So I had to be close to him always in the race. So when he was bored, he used to tell me, okay, radio, tell me something. And hey, tell me something, you know. It's not like every minute I'm ready to talk. And he said, no, you have always something to tell me. Hey, and so he had like a remote, and he was doing like, hey, green light, talk something, red light, tend to sleep.
And obviously Fabian Cancellara is someone you've worked with a lot the last few years. Is it true that, or maybe it was Andy Schleck said that he had to tell you to shut up sometimes?
Andy used to tell me, you know, with Andy I had also like close relationship, and sometimes, you know, when I was out of control talking a lot, sometimes he used to tell me, hey, Markel, it's enough, now shut up, take a rest of five minutes, no? So sometimes we were checking the time, this one, I mean the teammates, they were checking how much time I was able to be quiet, you know, so they didn't tell me nothing, and then they were like 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, presented by Trainer Road, cycling's most effective training tool.
I hope you've enjoyed this Basque Country themed episode of the Cycling Podcast. Thank you very much to Trainer Road for their sponsorship of the cycling podcast throughout the winter. Lionel Burney, Rob Hatch, and I will be updating you soon on our progress with the Trainer Road programmes. Our latest Friends special, meanwhile, is an at-home with Adam and Simon Yates. The twins who ride for Orica Greenedge are two of the most exciting young talents in the sport. They've been up there in mountain stages and grand tours and races like the Critérium du Dauphiné. And this year, a week after the Tour de France, Adam won a classic. Fittingly enough for this Basque Country themed episode, it was the San Sebastian Classic. And in fact, I saw his name written on one of the climbs that I laboured up while I was riding there during my visit to the Basque Country. To listen to the Yates brothers talk frankly about their early days in cycling, turning professional, about being twins and teammates and much else besides, become a friend of the podcast at www.thecyclingpodcast.com. It's £5 for the year, which gives you access to 11 Friends specials. And stay tuned for details of our 2016 Friends offer, which we should be announcing next week. But in the meantime, here's a teaser from our new Friends special, Lionel Burney in conversation with Adam and Simon Yates.
When you were at school and cycling's your passion, becoming your passion, was there anything else you were interested in? I mean, did you kind of have that single-minded thing that I want to be a professional cyclist? When did that thought first occur? And was everything else kind of secondary to that? Or were you academic? Were you interested in other things? What could the alternative career path have been, Adam?
Yeah, it's hard to say, really. Like, when we were in school and we weren't really interested, were we? We were just kind of just there wasting time.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
Like, we just wait until, we have time to come home, and then we go out training. We used to go out training in the dark around here, actually, pitch black. And I think for me anyway, I went to college as well, but that was probably the worst time of life. I hated it.
What did you study?
Oh, something to do with sport. To be honest, I have no idea.
that says its own story.
Yeah, at least you finished. It was kind of my mum's idea. She kind of forced me to go. so I wasn't being a bum at home.
Saying that, though, it's like you can't.
Yeah.
We had nothing else to do at that point in time. Yeah. We weren't on the academy. It was a two-year course. I did 1 year of this course, but I managed to get a place in the academy, so
yeah.
I left straight away. But
with your parents, not only a lot of commitment for them taking you to races, all the support they have to do, and allowing you the space to develop your cycling whilst trying not to kind of get too alarmed that if it doesn't work out, what are you going to do? You can't live at home till you could, I suppose. You could live at home till you're 40, but wouldn't recommend it.
Try. Yeah. From the start, they always took us everywhere, didn't they? Like,
yeah.
We wouldn't have got to all these races. And we always did the national series as well, on the road, or on the track, really.
Yeah, both.
And, it's all over the country, so just racing experience.
Even before that, though, with the regional track races that I was talking about then, you're going straight up to Scotland, because we were always part of the Northwest or the North region or whatever it was, and we'd always go to Edinburgh or is it Dundee the other one, and the tracks there, outdoor concrete ones, and race there, so taking us everywhere. It's pretty incredible, really, what they did for us, and
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, in a way, I really enjoyed the adventure. Yeah. I mean, we always, give 100%, and we always wanted to go and race, and I think it makes it easy for them because they know that we're enjoying it, and, we're getting on and having a laugh, and we're actually, and then most of the time, getting some pretty decent results as well, so, in a way, I reckon they enjoyed it.
Now, when you mentioned about you got a place on the British Cycling Academy, Simon, and Adam, you didn't, but I'm sure you went for one, but weren't selected. I mean, was that a difficult period? I mean, was there? I'm not trying to sort of do the journalist thing of like, was there family friction there and so, but it must have been difficult for both of you in a way, because Simon had got what you presumably were shooting for, and Simon, you would have wanted your brother to achieve the same thing as well.
Yeah, I applied anyway. We both applied at the same time, and now everyone knows I'm a climber. And when you're racing as a junior and you start running 23, there's not many races you can do in England, or most of the time everyone goes to Belgium or Netherlands, and there's not many races that actually go uphill or finish on a climb. Sorry. I didn't really have any results or anything to show that I was ready for the academy. I had a few results on the track, but nothing. There's always someone there who was better than me or had better qualifications. So
yeah, it was disappointing, but I got on with it and moved to France. So.
And Simon, what was the academy experience like for you? Because I suppose from what Adam's saying there, you perhaps were a little bit more of an all-rounder, because obviously, you know, we don't need to explain your track pedigree as well, but you much more fitted into the type of rider that the academy would be able to develop.
Yeah, I think it comes back to the track. It was all about the track, really, I think, when the selection came down to it at the end of the day. And, you know, like, Adam was still there in the results of these, you know, the big track races that we do, you know, the nationals or whatever. But it was always, he was always like fourth, you know, and I would always be second or first or whatever position I came, you know. And just that like one little position down was always sort of the deciding factor. Like, as I said, there's always going to be like the other two medalists who are going to be higher on the, you know, on the list to join the academy. So I think that's just the way it was at the end of the day. But yeah, I enjoy my time on the academy. I think it's a good laugh, you know. I was always nipping home and seeing the parents and stuff and getting my teacup for me, because I still didn't know how to cook at that point. So,
any good now?
Not really.
Oh, we try. We're getting better. Yeah.
We're getting better.
You got a speciality?
Oh. Oh, probably spaghetti bolognese. It's not really a speciality or not difficult to make, but...
That's all right. It's all right. Fuel for the engine, isn't it? I like a good spag bowl. Tabasco sauce in it always gives it a little bit of a kick. If that just... Try that. Yeah.
There you go. Improving every day.
Yeah. Improving. Daily, learn something every day, yeah. And people are tuning in for the cookery tips, obviously.
Yeah. So, yeah.
The Telegraph Cycling Podcast. Brought to you by Trainer Road, cycling's most effective training tool. Pair your power meter with over 800 workouts and 80 training plans to make you a faster cyclist. Visit trainerroad.com/TCP to try Trainer Road risk-free for 30 days.